Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Chertletau from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Boston is Matt Kelly. Matt is well known within compliance world as the editor of Radical Compliance and a frequent commentator on the state of the compliance and ethics profession. Matt, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Oh, hello, Adam. I am thrilled to be on this podcast. Thank you for having me.
We are thrilled as well. So we're going to talk today about a subject you've been covering a lot, and I think is always an intriguing and under-discussed one, which is trust. It seems like the topic of trust is coming up a lot lately. What's the data showing about trust in the workplace?
Yeah, it definitely is. And I have some numbers for our listeners here, but by and large, I would describe trust in your own workplace and people's trust in business generally. This is not an entirely grim bag of news, but there is not a lot that is warm and fuzzy about these numbers I'm about to give either. So this all comes from the Edelman Trust Barometer, which comes out every January, and I would recommend all ethics and compliance people read it when it comes out. It is a survey that's been going on for like more than 30 years, and it surveys people's trust in various types of institutions. So government, non-governmental organizations, church and religious affiliations, the media, businesses, 30,000 or more people in countries around the world, very comprehensive, solid data. And here's what they have to say. In the United States, people who find business trustworthy in 2018 was 54%. So more people, a majority, find businesses trustworthy. Okay, that is up from 48% in 2017 when a majority did not find businesses trustworthy. And even then, there are lower amounts of trust in government, in the media, in religious organizations, in other NGOs. So that's the bad, but it's bad in general. And this is where it gets really interesting in my mind, is that the Edelman Trust Report also asked people about trust in their own business where they work. And most employees do trust their companies, 75%. And look, nobody else, no other institution is anywhere near 75%. You know, they're all floating somewhere between mid-40s to mid-50s. It's kind of a messy soup for everything except your trust in your own company. That's quite high. And there are equally large majorities who want their businesses to be more values-driven, 74%, and socially aware, 67%. So that's all the data that, like, I think there's a real thirst for the public to have trust in many institutions generally. But actually, most people, if you ask most employees, would say, yeah, I generally trust my own company to do the right thing. I just don't trust anything else in this country. And that seems to be the sentiment at the moment.
We're in an interesting position. People have low trust in everything but where they work. And that's dangerous because it's probably easy to quickly lose trust with your organization. But at the same time, it may lead to very elevated demands of your organization, given what people see elsewhere. How should companies be thinking about this new environment and what it means for them?
Well, I think that they should appreciate or understand where this environment is coming from. And so I think a lot of it is that if other institutions are not really addressing bigger issues very well, and they're not, you know, whether it's the government or the media or any other institution that's out there, there are a lot of public policy issues that we are not reaching a consensus on. I don't know when we are. I don't know what the consensus would be, and I'm not here to talk about what I think it should be. But if other institutions are failing at solving our bigger problems, people are going to start looking around for, well, what other institution do I know that is bigger than me and powerful and that I trust? And maybe they can do something for all of these issues. That would be their employer. So they start to say, we would like to see more of addressing of these issues that are out in the big world, whether they are politically divisive or not, and they can be, you know, gun control, climate change, immigration. Yes, those are divisive issues. And I'm not saying that I know what the stance should be, but people are very frustrated that these things are not getting resolved in ways that they want. And so they start trying to figure out who else might be able to advance my concerns. Maybe my employer could. And they start bringing it to me or to bringing it to the business. The Edelman Trust report did say that 70% or more of employees want their CEOs to be more direct and outspoken on very difficult social issues like that. And I don't think we historically would have seen that in the past, but we are seeing it now. It's interesting to note, where does the word trust actually come from? It is a Norse word that, among other things, meant help, protection, and alliance. And it has a certain connotation when we say that we trust my organization. It means, you know, we're in pursuit of common goals and we work with each other. And if people are looking for bigger solutions or, you know, ways to address difficult issues, they're going to start thinking, well, can my company maybe address some of this too? And we've seen that. It's in the news. Any number of consumer activism out there or employees that are trying to be more voluble or more assertive in what they want. So that's where this puts companies, is they have this issue. They're going to have to figure out how to deal with it. I don't know how they should, but I'm just saying it's there in front of you.
Yeah, and there's two, I think, really sticky issues here. Is one, what's a CEO supposed to do? And secondly, with all this pressure on organizations and discussions of what's the right thing for the organization to do, are people going to start asking compliance and ethics teams to start weighing in outside of legal regulatory issues? So let's break that up into two questions. First, you know, since everything starts with tone at the top, what should leadership be doing to build trust within the organization? And I'm not just talking about sort of these political issues, but in general,
no.
What should be done to build trust within the organization?
I think a lot of it is just basically holding managers accountable for infractions or deviations from the code of conduct or policy or whatever it is. But when somebody misbehaves, making sure that they are held accountable and then that is visible and it can be talked about. I'm not necessarily saying you publish every employee disciplinary action on, you know, the company kitchen, but, you know, definitely let employees see when so-and-so commits some sort of violation. They do not get kid gloves. They do not get special treatment. They get the same treatment anybody else would get. I think a lot of companies actually stepped up to that lately with Me Too scandals, where a lot of companies were getting rid of some very promising executives for misconduct that should have led to them being shown the door. And I won't name specific companies right now, but I can think of some big brand names that wound up getting rid of people who were supposed to be running the company in the 2020s and beyond, and now they are not here because they had been accused and employees were basically looking for accountability. And if you can impose that, I think it goes a long way. Along similar lines, you know, I am somewhat curious what this Business Roundtable statement from a couple of weeks ago about the purpose of a corporation and including other stakeholders, what is really going to happen there and how would you build processes for that to consider other types of stakeholders? That gets back a little more to the big divisive public policy issues we can avoid. But even in very practical ways, we're thinking about how can employees express what they want, express what they see, express what they're concerned about. So it's a lot on, do we have whistleblower systems? Do we have internal reporting systems? Do we have managers ready to take a complaint and bring it up to the chain of command? And a lot of times it might not even be a complaint. It might be a statement that management way up on high, what you think is working, it's not. We down on the front line see that your idea isn't working for this, that, and the other reason, and we're trying to get that to you way up in central headquarters so you can respond. Can they get these concerns about what is not working up to central command? Does central command then have a way to show that we have heard that and we are responding to it in some sort of a language or a way or a gesture that regular employees, quote unquote regular, but you know, that employees can understand? It's all about not just can they speak up, but do they feel like they have been heard? It's a two-way street, alliance, that's trust, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, Let's talk about the compliance team's part about building trust. I mean, it's obviously something a compliance team needs to do all the time. Given all that's going on, there may be pressure for the compliance team to start getting involved in what are business issues, what are social responsibility issues that sort of, well, not sort of, but go well beyond the scope of the legal and regulatory requirements that compliance teams have traditionally handled. And, you know, and I think what compliance teams personally, I think, should stick to. But how does a compliance team in this sort of environment instill trust within the organization?
You know, I think it really is a lot about outreach and communication. And a compliance officer, I know she described it to me the other week, as she's building a compliance function for the first time at a very large institution. And she said so much of it is just about branding and awareness and showing people that they can come to us. So it will be a lot, it will echo a lot of what I just said for CEOs. It's about showing people that they can speak up and that they will be heard, that they will be protected. So making the mechanics of the whistleblower hotline work well. Tinkering with your corporate policies to make sure that the whistleblower hotline, you know, I like to say it's always there as the fallback when other ways that you might raise concerns aren't working because the manager is the problem or the VP is the problem. But tinker with corporate policies to address recalcitrant or disinterested managers and VPs and other senior level people to show them that, no, this is what is important, that we have to make sure employees feel like they can bring issues to us. It could be as pedestrian as including a good example of a disciplinary issue that was resolved in the employee internal newsletter. And yes, we scrub out all the identifying details. We all know that. But, you know, doing that sort of thing, probably walking around or talking with compliance, with regular employees on a regular basis so that they know what the compliance function is and its purpose. You know, I was about to say training, but I'm not quite sure that's exactly what I mean. Training is always going to be a part of what compliance officers do, but there is a great opportunity in delivering training, whether you do it through videos or through case studies or whatever, but a great opportunity there to show employees that the compliance officer putting out the training understands the practical challenges of your job. So I'm not necessarily saying that all of your training videos should look like some hipper than thou version of The Office, but there should be some awareness of what the actual challenges are in the company. And, you know, maybe some honest discussion about sometimes, you know, you're going to find a manager who might be a jerk and we want to know about that. Here's how you can get us to us there. But, you know, that, see how you could try and telegraph some of those messages about trust and that we are a partner here for you through the things that you do to reach employees. And one of the big things you do is you give them training. So think about how you might work through it that way too.
So You can't talk today about the impact of social media and what it's doing, the pressure it exerts on corporations as a whole, and I think on ethics and compliance programs. How does all of that external, publicly discussed pressure apply to what we've been saying here so far?
I am a firm believer that social media is not really a risk unto itself. Social media magnifies the risks an organization already has. So what I mean there is that it makes these risks more transparent. It accelerates the risk velocity from when you might have a problem to when it blows up in your face. It amplifies the voices of those who believe that your actions are out of step with the ethical mores of the community. Now, why do they believe that? Because they're self-appointed. And once you're on Twitter, you think you know everything. And I love Twitter. I'm on Twitter all the time. But really, it is a magnifying lens for all of this. And I think the other big thing that it does is it lets different constituencies find each other and form alliances to push the ethical views that they have.
Matt, thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts on this, on both outreach and trust. I think opposite sides of the same coin in many ways. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.